With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim.
I'm a Negro, black as the night is black. Black like the depths of my Africa.
The late poet Langston Hughes, subject of a second concluding biography by Arnold Rampersad. Volume 2 begins in 1941 on the black poet's 39th birthday. Not a good year for Langston Hughes. Here's Rampersad.
He was evicted from his apartment in New York. He was unpaid for some work he had labored on, and he had been attacked by the religious right wing as an atheist and a communist. He was also ill with an ailment he couldn't really talk about in public.
Arnold Rampersad tracked down Hughes' medical records at a hospital in Carmel, California.
I didn't know exactly what I was looking at, and then I took them to a friend who was a doctor, and he said, "Oh, I see your hero has had a case of gonorrhea." And I said, not Langston. No, not my Langston. No, impossible."
Rampersad defends his decision to include the warts in Langston Hughes' life.
But one thing that I was determined to do when I set out to write the biography of Langston Hughes, who is a hero to so many people, is to leave nothing out, nothing that I considered relevant.
But Rampersad says that no matter what Langston Hughes did in his lifetime, he emerged looking good.
He was a man of enormous integrity, of vision, of commitment to principle, commitment to his art, commitment to his people.
Langston Hughes struggled for money most of his life, survived attacks from the right wing, and through his art was a bitter opponent of Jim Crow. The Life of Langston Hughes, Volume 2 by Arnold Rampersad, was published by Oxford University Press. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim.
What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Or fester like a sore and then run?
The great black poet Langston Hughes. In his new biography of Hughes, Arnold Rampersad says that in 1941, the poet was in the hospital with gonorrhea, desperately in need of money, when he begged his publisher Knopf for a loan. Knopf agreed to give Hughes $400 if he surrendered the right to the royalties from his books forever.
From the very moment he signed, he regretted having done so. He regretted that, in a sense, the screws had been put to him in a moment of difficulty.
Later, Hughes was able to buy back his rights, but money was always a problem, and he scratched for funds all of his life, forced to hit the road to read his poetry for pay.
Whenever he came into a sum of money, a good sum of money, he tried to stay off the road because he knew that it was not doing his art much good.
Rampersad says that Langston Hughes was not a commanding speaker, but
what he had was a tremendous amount of charm, a kind of, for a long time, a sort of a boyish grace. He laughed a lot. I mean, there was a chuckle lodged in his throat.
Down on Lenox Avenue the other night, by the pale, dull pallor of an old gaslight, he did a lazy sway. He did a lazy sway to the tune of those weary blues.
The Oxford University Press published The Life of Langston Hughes, Volume 2 by Arnold Rampersad. Volume 1 is available in paperback, and Hughes reading from his work has been recorded by Spoken Arts of New Rochelle, New York. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. The black poet, Langston Hughes.
I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
Accusations that Langston Hughes was a communist dogged him all of his life because of the radical poetry he wrote. But in the second volume of a biography of Hughes, writer Arnold Rampersad sets the record straight.
He was never a communist, according to his own statements and according to all available evidence. The FBI investigated him fairly thoroughly, and they could not come up with any evidence that he'd ever been a communist.
But Langston Hughes was a man of the left. One of his most controversial poems, Goodbye Christ, embraced the Soviet Union in the 1930s.
When he repudiated a poem, his poem Goodbye Christ, in 1939, I think he intended to set behind him quite a few of the radical pieces he had done, and to return, as he said, to Negroes, nature, and love.
In the 1950s, Hughes was called before Senator Joseph McCarthy's Communist Hunting Committee.
He compromised with McCarthy. He named no names. He did repudiate certain things he had said and done in the past.
It was clear Langston Hughes did not want to lose his support from his own people.
He walked a tightrope. I mean, he was determined not to have anything cripple his relationship to the black community.
Arnold Rampersad has written a concluding biography of the life of Langston Hughes, Volume 2, published by Oxford University Press. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. The acclaimed black poet Langston Hughes used his art to attack the evils of his day, racism, segregation, and Jim Crow.
They hit me in the head and knocked me down. Then they kicked me on the ground. A Klansman said, "Nigger, look me in the face." and tell me you believe in the great white race.
In the concluding volume of his biography of Langston Hughes, Arnold Ramper says that Hughes was a frequent victim of racism as he traveled during the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Ramper says that one of Hughes' worst experiences occurred at the airport in Atlanta.
He talked about his most humiliating Jim Crow experience waiting in the Atlanta airport, stranded there because of bad weather, unable to get a cup of coffee. No taxi would take him to town because the drivers were white.
Strangely, Langston Hughes sat out the civil rights movement of the 1960s.
He was exhausted from fighting. The standard had been snatched up by younger, bolder hands.
But Langston Hughes went on to other things as a writer. He wrote songs until the end of his life, launched the first gospel musicals in American history, turned out young adult books, picture books, short stories, and a history of the NAACP. In a column for the Chicago Defender and later the New York Post, Langston Hughes created a character called Jesse B. Simple.
A black Harlem everyman who meets in a bar with a character like Hughes, and Jesse B. Simple holds forth on every significant topic of the day.
Arnold Ramper said, author of The Life of Langston Hughes, Volume 2, published by the Oxford University Press. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. It is possible that the black poet Langston Hughes need not have died in the way he did.
In a way, he invited less than top-flight medical attention.
That's Arnold Ramper said, author of the concluding volume of a biography of Langston Hughes. Hughes had put off seeing a doctor for some time. Finally, the pain became unbearable, and he checked into a Manhattan hospital as James Hughes. He had no medical insurance, and the doctors, who found a prostate condition, did not know who he was and thought he was indigent.
They removed his prostate gland, and he should have recovered. But almost immediately he went downhill, and all efforts to save him were in vain.
Langston Hughes died of bronchial pneumonia on May 22, 1967. He was 65, but his voice continues to ring out.
He saw his art in the context always of the search for social justice. He persisted in his attempts to render the image of black Americans in art, and also at the same time to reach all of America.
Southern gentle lady, do not swoon. They've just hung a black man in the dark of the moon. They've hung a black man to a roadside tree in the dark of the moon for the world to see how Dixie protects its white womanhood. Southern gentle lady, be good. Be good.
Arnold Ramper is the author of The Life of Langston Hughes, Volume 2, published by Oxford University Press. Volume 1 is now in paperback. With BookBeats, I'm Don Swaim.